Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
Listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 53 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can follow us on X at Emerald Flow Show and listen to us on all of your podcast apps and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you can, and if you're feeling generous, you can donate to us at voicesofwrestling.com/donate. I'm Gerard. I'm flying solo this week because Paul is on his way to Japan and just the timing around the holidays and everything didn't work out for us to record together. But we have a lot to get to because, we're going into that time of the year where there's so much going on in Japan in terms of shows starting from December 31st onwards. And before we begin, I have to apologize. I sent out a tweet saying that there wasn't going to be an NXT presence on the All Japan show on January 2nd. I had tried to track that story down and I was wrong. And it's funny because it only came out a few minutes after I did that. I take full responsibility. It was not Paul at all. Very embarrassing. And I know this isn't an excuse or anything, but just to give a frame of mind reference here, I know that there was other journalists following the story that didn't think also there wasn't going to be an NXT a challenger for the Triple Crown on December 2nd. Again, very embarrassing. And I've tried generally not to be someone that does scoops or anything like that because I didn't want to necessarily deal with it. And I've had stuff come across my radar hearing things that actually turned out to be very true on some, fairly big things. But I guess what sort of ended up motivating me to try to track something down, although albeit wrongly, was just obviously the amount of attention that this was getting and everything like that. Someone had like a Google Trends thing about All Japan and it just shot up dramatically, upon that sort of, rumors that there was going to be an NXT presence and everything like that. And, I think a lot of people that were covering this didn't know anything about the promotion really and everything like that. So I just felt like if I could, I cover it. So that screwed up and I'm very sorry. You know, from now on, I'm going to refrain from doing anything like that again, honestly, unless, you know, but even then, I just don't necessarily want to deal with tracking everything down and confirming everything like that. So again, I hope you'll forgive me and continue to, listen to our show. So we have to get to a lot of stuff, but before we get to what's going on for sort of over New Year's and everything like that, we're going to start with just a few little notes. Noah Monday Magic had another really good show on the 18th, which was headlined by Kaito Kiyomiya defeating Ryohei Oiwa in a pretty good match. You could sort of tell that maybe they weren't, they were holding back. Maybe that will be a bigger match, singles match come down the line. But again, you know, just went just under 15 minutes, very much worth it. And then we had Kota Minoru and Ben K from Dragon Gate teaming with Keno against Manabu Soya, Masakidomi, and Daiki Inaba, with the Keno team winning that. Again, really good match. Just, you know, another fun show with, you know, not too long matches. And the younger talent and everything like that continues to be one of the best parts of Noah, without question. And then also on, I did not see the subsequent Korakuen just before Christmas, although that drew not very well at all. I think 600 and something. So, you know, Noah sort of continues to struggle on that front. So we'll see when things turn around. And then also on December 21st, there was Noah Monday Magic. Or sorry, not Noah Monday Magic, a New Age Chronicle 2 from All Japan, which is sort of Rising Hayato's young guy show. Really the top, I thought the whole show was really solid, top to bottom, but really the top two matches of the Aoyagi brothers with the Saito brothers and the main event of Yuma Anzai and Ryuki Honda versus Rising Hayato and Imabari Tao Mascaris from Iheim Pro. Really good match. Again, they gave the Hayato and towel, I guess, for lack of a better term, team a lot. I think coming, since they're both from Iheim Pro, I mean, I'm sure that Hayato's probably trying to get Mascaris into All Japan. He's a little small by All Japan standards, but he's obviously very young and there's a lot of potential there. I guess before we get into previewing the shows themselves, we have to go over a couple of other news and notes. First off, the Actress Girls promotion has signed some sort of business agreement with All Japan, which I think, well, not necessarily specifically AWG, but it was obviously a long time coming that they were looking to sign some sort of deal with a women's promotion. There was that deal with Ice Ribbon, but that fell apart when things in Ice Ribbon started to fall apart a couple years ago. So, I mean, we're getting an Actress Girls presence on January 3rd, and we had a silly skit with President Fukuda, Tsuyoki Fukuda, introducing himself to some members of their roster. We'll talk more about Fukuda later. So I think that was inevitable, and I think that's good. And I think we're going to see them more on January 3rd. I honestly don't know anything about this promotion. This is one of the only promotions in Japan that I have never really watched and have no sort of the faintest feelings of all on. I know they have their own streaming service and everything like that, and the company's gone through sort of different restructuring over time with sort of the directions that it wants to take with you know, like I believe like ACT and Colors and everything like that, and I don't know all of the different differentiations, but I know that a fair amount of talent from the Joshi scene has started in the company, so I think that will, and from people I do talk to, that there's a lot of people that are generally, you know, fairly high on the promotion. So I think that is going to be a good sign, depending on how it's handled. But we'll get into that more a little later, probably in the surprising thing, although it's given some of the names, although it's not particularly surprising that people are leaving All Japan at the end of the year, because that's now like a yearly occurrence. We have Taka Omori and the ring announcer Tiger Kihara leaving. Both sort of surprising names, given their stature. Kihara has been with the company since 1987. Has been a ring announcer since 1989. I don't know anything what's going on with that. Maybe he wanted to move on. Maybe the company is restructuring, looking for, it could be also a case they want, like, you know, younger people on this. That would not necessarily shock me, given the direction the company is going. Again, I'm just speculating. I don't know anything about that. Kiara has also played a role in sort of putting together a lot of those, like, Baba-related memorial shows. So with Kyohei Wada, I would assume that would continue unless he's getting out of the business. So we'll see what that's all about. I mean, Kiara obviously has lots of friends in the business. He takes pictures regularly with himself, with other people and other companies. So he could pop up somewhere else, or he could be leaving the business. I guess we'll just have to watch for that. Omori is a bit of a surprise because it's been reported that he's well-liked among the other wrestlers backstage. I mean, he's in his mid-50s now. I think he might be coming up on 55 or 56 years old next year. I thought he may, you know, people have speculated that he had a hand in sort of booking or running things backstage. I don't know how valid or accurate that is. But it does come as a surprise for someone to leave a company like that. Now, again, is he going, see people speculate he's going to go to DDT to join Jun Akiyama. That obviously would seem like the most obvious landing spot. Maybe he'll freelance. Maybe he wants to not be full-time, but sort of be semi-retired or like part-time. I don't know. Again, this year it's both been two older talents, and it could be a case of the company sort of wanting to, you know, clear out some of the older talent because, you know, the roster average age, if you compare it to what was like 5 years ago, has gotten younger. There's less over 50 wrestlers in the company. Actually, with Omori, I don't think there will be anyone over 50 other than Fuchi, but that's sort of a special case. So I don't know what's up with that. I obviously wish him the best. I think he's, you know, I, dear favorite of mine, you know, an underrated talent. I don't think he was quite, you know, the high elite 10 out of 10 level, but I think he is actually sort of underrated if you look back at his whole career. And really, I don't think it's ridiculous or want to say he's one of the best tag team workers of all time if you consider all of his tag teams, from, you know, the tag team with Akiyama, because they started in the 90s and they had like held the All Asia tag titles for like 3 or 4 years. And then he had No Fear. And then he had various tag teams like with Manabu Nakanishi and Wild Child. He had Get Wild with Manabu Soya. Just a really underrated tag worker of the last 30 years. You know, obviously he slowed down, but he's got ring intelligence where, whatever, you know, he can still have a better match than maybe you would think so, given the way he, you know, and he doesn't move around like horribly or anything like that, but he does show his age and everything like that. So, I mean, I'm sad to see him go because obviously like sentimental favorite and everything like that. But I will be watching for what he does next, and that will be interesting. And, you know, I see it probably as more of a situation of the youth movement, but maybe something will come out and saying that, no, there's more drama backstage and everything like that. Because, you know, that's sort of interesting to talk about and everything like that. But, you know, people will tie it into other things going on, and we'll talk about that now. Obviously, I hinted at it earlier during my apology and everything. But yes, Charlie Dempsey will be facing the winner of Kento Miyahara versus Kazuhiko Nakajima on January 3rd for the Triple Crown. He is the special assassin of President Fukuda. This has obviously driven many people very angry. They are very suspicious of any sort of WWE involvement in Japan, what they could do to the scene there. And, you know, it's not an out there or illegitimate concern and everything like that. But I'm going to be honest with you, I am not panicking. I don't see any reason to do so. I mean, look, they just signed an agreement with Abima, and which apparently is not going that well, just in terms of total viewers. You know, they had Walter in Big Japan a couple years ago. Nothing came of that, although, you know, there were rumors they were trying to buy Big Japan. And then there was obviously Nakamura against Great Muta last January 2023. Again, nothing happened. It was a one-off. I would say that if they had sent someone like a Braun Breaker or a Grayson Waller, I would be more concerned. But they had William Regal do a video saying, you know, I want to represent the European style. I want him to represent the European style. And he revealed that he was, you know, Dempsey's real son. And he spent more time in the video talking about the legacy of Billy Robinson than WWE. So this is probably a favorite set up through Hideki, you know, because he was a coach in NXT and everything like that, and Regal, and everything like that. I do not think it is some bigger sign of a takeover. I would say that if they announce more, then you could be more suspicious. But right now, I think this is just a one-off through, like, you know, get him some Japanese experience. Because he was in the New Japan Dojo, I believe, but I'm not sure if he was in the one in Japan or in LA. And, you know, but he didn't wrestle on any New Japan shows, I believe, or not very many. So this gives him a high profile thing and that sort of thing to give him some experience. So that's all I think this is. And look, I'm simply not panicking. I'm really not. So, I mean, I don't watch WWE or any really North American wrestling these days and everything like that. So I had to sort of do a quick crash course in Charlie Dempsey. And, you know, he's a pretty good worker from what I've seen. There's a match, him versus Axiom from Booker T's Reality of Wrestling that's easily found on YouTube. Goes, I think, over 16 minutes. It has, like, a little bit of interference at the end, not surprisingly. What do you expect? But the rest of the match is very solid. You know, he is obviously trained in that European style, very similar to his father and everything like that. So, I mean, I, honestly, regardless of whether he's against Miyahara and Nakajima, although I will get into this later, I think it's going to be Miyahara still. It's going to be a good match, I think. I don't know if it's going to be a great match. You know, a lot of people are not impressed. Obviously, I get it. I don't want to speak for Paul, but he didn't seem too impressed. A lot of people that I know are going to be in Japan are skipping the show. I mean, if I were there, I'd go. I don't have any issue with this, anything like that. Again, it just seems like a cooties theory. Like, you go near someone, you get, you know, infected with the mythical cooties. I just don't see any of this happening. Again, that could be disastrously wrong, and we see about that. But I think ultimately it'll be a nice little match. That's, they need someone, right? I mean, this is still one of the weaknesses with All Japan for all of its success in 2023 is a lack of challengers. And you could say, well, who is this guy? I mean, he's not even anything within the context that he's coming from and everything like that. And I get it. But, you know, as soon as more NXT talent gets announced for All Japan, then you can worry. Otherwise, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the match. Because I think it'll be good. I don't know what else to say. I'm just not that angry or upset about it. You know, it is what it is. And I think it'll ultimately be a good match. So we're going to preview the shows, and we'll start, I guess we'll go in chronological order, because that sort of makes the most sense. So we start with December 31st at Yoyogi National Gymnasium number 2 for All Japan's show. The match order is out, so I can go in that exact match order. First match, Gaora TV Championship, sort of six-man preview tag. Got Black Mansoure, Takuya Nomura, Fuminori Abe versus Minoru Tanaka, Naruki Doi, and Koji Iwamoto. I mean, I think that would be a very solid opener. And I think probably Tanaka is going to pin Mansoure prior to their match. It just makes the most sense, because I'll get into that more later. Next up, second match, this is the Takao Omori farewell match to All Japan Pro Wrestling. We got Ryuki Honda, Ryo Inoue, and Takao Omori versus Koji Doi finally returning. And Kuma Arashi also returning, and the Mitsuya Nagai. Could be a solid little match. I'm sure Omori will get a lot of his spots and shine in. Third match, we've got Yoshitatsu, who, actually, I gotta say, I'm surprised he's still staying at the company and everything like that, especially the way he's been booked over the last year. He's definitely being wound down. He's not having these little weird little angles like Yoshitatsu Kingdom or the Tatsuverse or anything like that. So he's teaming with Yuma Aoyagi versus Shuji Ishikawa and Ren Ayabe. We could say that's a sort of not the most efficient use of Yuma on this card, but it is what it is. You know, people sometimes Yuma will not be on a big match on a card, and some people will be like gloom and doom about things. I'm not. It's just, you know, the main event is really what's the focus of this show, so I wouldn't read too much into this match on the show. So, I mean, assuming Lee Ishikawa and Ayabe win, and I have no clue, but I mean, Ayabe is someone you got to think about who could be announced as having a contract on January 2nd. And then fourth match, the true Rookie of the Year match. We have Jun Sato versus Rei Saito. They set this up on the New Age Chronicle 2 show. I am looking forward to this, you know, because I have always been a Saito Brothers supporter, and I think this could be a lot of fun. You know, I watched a couple of Rei Saito's matches in the Dio. His match against Yuki Onaya was actually pretty good, because it was just the two big guys running into each other, and I know that Naya doesn't always have the best reputation, but it's actually worth watching. And the next up, we have the Shotaro Ashino return match. Shotaro Ashino and T-Hawk versus Kiyoshio Tokyo Japan and Sego Tachibana. You can all figure out who's probably losing here and everything like that. But look, Jiro and Tachibana always deliver, whether or not you don't want to like... Well, I mean, I've been on record many times about liking Tachibana, but, you know, Jiro is not a bad worker. It's just the whole act gets annoying and everything like that. So it could be a very solid match. And the sixth match is Yuma Anzai and Charlie Dempsey versus Tetsumi Fujinami and Leona. I sort of get where they're going with this. You know, in the video, Regal mentioned that he had like faced like people like Antonio Inoki and Fujinami. So, you know, getting that sort of rub for his son. Obviously, Leona probably loses here to Dempsey. We've said on the show that Leona's become a perfectly competent worker. Fujinami is limited. I mean, he's 70 years old. He's going to be 71 in 2024. You know, if he can just do some mat exchanges with these guys, I think that's all. And it may be a dragon screw. That will send the crowd home happy. In the seventh match, All Japan versus DDT. We've got Asuki Aoyagi and Rising Hayato versus the KOD champion Yuki Ueno and Toi Kojima. I would expect some big things from this. I think that they're going to want to sort of, you know, they're relatively high up on the card. So I think they're going to want to make a statement and everything like that. And I think it will be really good. And I think the All Japan team will win because Kojima is not necessarily like a push commodity that much in DDT. And then the eighth match, World Junior Heavyweight Champion. We've got Al Lindemann versus the Junior Battle of Glory champion winner, Dan Tamara. This is obviously, I think, going to be Dan's big crowning moment. And I would say that they would probably gel. But with, like, Lindemann has looked very uninspired and uninterested in this junior title reign. It seems like the Great Office just told him, hey, we're going to do this, you're going to do this, you're going to have these defenses, whatever. The only match from the reign, or the match from the reign I like the most, was actually the match against Jonathan Gresham back in Sapporo. I actually thought that was a very solid match, and I thought that Gresham worked really hard, and I think that Al Lindemann got into it because Gresham was sort of pushing him and like wanting to have like a nice technical match, fast-paced technical match, and that was probably my favorite match of the reign. So I expect Dan to win here, have his big moment, and you know, it'll be interesting to see where things go. I mean, I think obviously Atsuki is always waiting in the wings to win the title back. It could be Rising Hayato finally getting the title next. I mean, Dan's getting the title before Rising Hayato, even though Hayato's developed himself into a star, because obviously Dan is a you know, one of their dojo boys and everything like that, which is fine. I think that that's not too big of an issue. Dan really does have a fan following. I think people sort of underestimate that. And so I think that he will do well as junior champion. And just again, I just hope they don't fall into the pattern. Like, he'll get a couple defenses, lose to outsiders. I hope they can find some fresh faces for him to find himself in the ring against, because, you know, they just had the Junior Battle of Glory where they all face each other and everything like that. So we'll see what happens. I would assume, though, maybe Hikaru Sato is probably going to be one of the earlier challengers because they had a draw in the tournament, and then they've got the whole partner thing. And, you know, Dan finally getting his big win over Sato in a title match would be big for him. And next to the ninth match in the semifinal, which I was sort of surprised that this appeared where it is, but we've got Suwama, Hideki Suzuki, and Hikaru Sato versus Minoru Suzuki, Davey Boy Smith Jr., and Hokuto Omori. That this is going to be the semi-main event is, I think, in part because this is Smith's debut in All Japan. He was scheduled to be in the 2020 Champion Carnival, but then, you know, the pandemic happened and everything like that. They're playing off of some Suzuki Gun nostalgia by putting Suzuki and Smith back together. And I think that, well, Smith's going to be around on January 2nd and 3rd. It's hearing some, there seems to be some rumblings, like in the Observer, it said he'll be starting with the promotion as a regular, I believe the term was. So you got to assume, that, he might be around. He probably is going to be, if this is right, in the Champion Carnival, because I think Dave does talk to Smith, in the Champion Carnival and everything like that. So, I mean, he's obviously someone that would be a fresh challenger. I mean, you know, I go back and forth. I mean, I don't think Smith necessarily has ever lived up to some of the hype that people thought, but I think against the right opponent, you know, he can have a good match. And I think ultimately for All Japan, it's probably a good thing. I mean, he fits in because of his size and everything like that. So I have no problems with this, in all honesty. You know, and he's been away for a bit, so, you know, he's kind of fresh, hasn't been in Japan in a while, and he's definitely fresh in All Japan, so I've got no problem with it and anything like that. I wouldn't be calling for a Triple Crown reign or anything like that, though. And then in the main event, of course, we've got, for the Triple Crown, Kazuhiko Nakajima versus Kento Miyahara. I don't know what else to say, obviously. I mean, Nakajima's going around with this incredible heel troll where he's, you know, posing with the Triple Crown with Hisashi Shinma, former president of actually the WWF and New Japan. And he says he's going to come out to Inoki's Bumbaye theme and everything like that. He's got the red towel around his neck, really leaning into, like, this. He's representing Inokiism against King's Road and everything like that. Could make for an incredible entrance. And an incredible match. I mean, we have to be talking about match of the year level caliber here to close at the year. And I think that will obviously get a lot of momentum on people's lists because it happens in the last day of the year. So as for the result, I mean, it's hard to say. We know that Nakajima will be hanging around at least on till January 14th because he's challenging for the World Tag Team titles with Hokuto Omori against the Saitos on the Masanobu Fuchi 70th anniversary show, or 70th birthday / 50th anniversary show. So does he win? I mean, I can't imagine that Miyahara is going to lose another Triple Crown match so soon again. And it just feels like this was always set up to be back and forth. Now, Fumi Saito on the Pacific Rim podcast had some comment where he's like, it sounds like Nakajima and Miyahara are working together to try to elevate All Japan. If that's the case, then maybe Nakajima's sticking around even if he's not joining the roster, so we'll see. But really, I think the right choice is Miyahara, especially if we simply don't know. Even if Nakajima wants to sort of work in All Japan continuously, you know, if he's not going to be contracted or full-time, I just don't know if you want to do this. And I think going into this, it just feels right, and it closes the story. And I think, you know, they did their thing, and I think what will happen if Miyahara wins, that they'll do the sort of reconciliation after the match or shortly after and everything like that. And I think there'd probably be some money to be made if they were a tag team as well. Going from that, Miyahara's probably Teflon if he were to lose, but then it just becomes incredibly contrived because you would assume that Miyahara's going to go through the Champion Carnival and win that again and everything like that. So I don't know. Of course, we have Ishino coming back and everything like that. I just think it's a better idea for all things considered just to get the Triple Crown back on him. You know, Nakajima came in, had that great match with Aoyagi. He won the Real World Tag League. You know, and maybe he'll be around some more. He might, you know, unless he completely signs a contract with New Japan, there's no reason why he could never be Triple Crown champion again or something like that. So it remains to be seen, but I'm going to lean, I'm not 100% by any means, but I'm going to lean Miyahara on this. It just seems the most likely outcome given the story. And Miyahara is finishing the story, as it were. So then we go, we'll stop. We'll go to January 2nd for All Japan, because this is an interesting thing, because there's not much announced, right? there's the annual New Year Battle Royale. It's no longer the Heavyweight Battle Royal because they got rid of the Junior Heavyweight Battle Royal. That happens around the same time. So all we've got, other than the Battle Royal, is Minoru Tanaka and Black Mensa Ray for the GRTV Championship. I mean, this title's not doing anything. I like Mensa Ray. I think he's underrated. I mean, he obviously, in other days, as Yohei Nakajima, he was a GRTV Champion. Will Tanaka drop it to someone like that? You never know, but I just don't know what else there is to be gleaned out of this title reign of Tanaka's, and because he's done most of the defenses and great and everything like that. But also, announced for the show are Mitsuya Nagai, Osamu Nishimura, Minoru Suzuki, Hideki Suzuki, Kuroshio Tokyo Japan, Naruki Doi, Koji Iwamoto, Fuminori Abe, Segi Tachibano, Takahiro Katori, who's that sort of like dog gimmick guy on the New Age Chronicle shows, and Davey Boy Smith Jr. I would assume that Charlie Dempsey's also on the show, and you got to assume that he's probably one of the leading candidates to win that Battle Royal, actually. And actually, you know, I'll just finish up with All Japan, because why not? On January 3rd, obviously, Charlie Dempsey versus the winner of the Triple Crown match. And then we have the Actress Girls Offer match, Mariah Ono and Natsuoya versus Chika Goto and Koki. I have not seen any of them, but I think that, you know, most people I know that watch Actress Girls do enjoy the promotion, so I'm looking to see forward what they can offer. So, yeah, there's obviously going to be a... I guess on December 31st, there's probably going to be stuff shot or like angles they do to set up some of the matches on January 2nd and 3rd, maybe, or at least some announcements of what those matches are. So we'll see. That is All Japan. I think, strangely enough, all of the momentum, the vibes, I should say, because this is all vibes, right? They haven't really done anything actually ridiculous yet. But I've always said that, like, you know, before the company was one bad booking decision away from going down the drain, now we can bump that up to two. But, you know, I think the vibes that people are giving it bad vibes because of the WWE NXT thing, and I've already been over that, but I think that, I mean, I was going to say, and I forgot to say it, December 31st show really doesn't have that much support on the undercard outside of the junior title match, which got built up. But the rest of the stuff is just like multi-man tags mostly. And then you got the Saito matches. Not a lot of support. Maybe, you know, but then maybe not. They decided, they looked at the main floor is almost always sold out. There's a few 70,000 yen ringside tickets available. Those will probably go on walk-up. And so people will have to sit up on like the upper, then second level. So, I mean, I assume we got to be talking about a show that could do 2,000. I think that is a realistic goal, and I think over 2,000 is within reach. I think that would be huge for All Japan to do over 2,000 on the strength of just that one match alone. I didn't read too much into this, and I think that it's the promotional thing. Why load up the show when you have, like, you know, one of the biggest matches in the company in years to do this sort of thing, right? So I get the logic of that. And I think that that's probably, if you see the card and you think there's not that much left, I think it'll be a good show. But I think that's the logic behind that. And I think that the show will still be good. The second and third remain to be seen. But, you know, I've already gotten my thoughts on the Dempsey thing. I just don't sweat it. And I just can't put the sort of outrage that other people do on this, even if obviously like that is a style of professional sports entertainment that I just do not like and have not really ever, well, I mean, when I was younger, yeah, but when I was like 15, 16, yeah, but I mean, I think there's also some hostility to Regal. I don't give a shit about any of that. I'm not British. He didn't ruin my indie scene. I don't care if he's a cardi behind the backstage in AEW. I really don't. I just don't. So I just can't get outraged at any of this. So that's All Japan. I mean, I still think that despite some of the bad vibes, they still have a chance to get a lot of attention going into this. And I think it is going to be a good New Year's Eve and New Year's for the company that's going to set up a lot of directions. But again, I could be wrong. We could be finding out that they're going down the sports entertainment route. Oh, one last thing on All Japan that I forgot to mention. The angle setting up the tease of the an NXT presence got a lot of people's radar. They're like, oh, is this a parody and a joke? And I think that captured people's attention. Maybe not the right term, but people were like, is this actually happening kind of thing? And in it, it was like Tsuyuki Fukuda in like the All Japan office, the Real World Tag League trophies and the Champion Carnival trophies was behind him. He's surrounded by some, I think, believe actress girls members in like their sexy Santa outfits and everything like that. And he gets a call and everything. But this is the second video of him in a couple of weeks. The first one was to set up the actress girls relationship. So to me, what I find more troublesome than any sort of relationship with WWE is Fukuda's now sort of becoming a character. I don't like that when you have management who are not wrestlers become characters. And of course, obviously people who have been longtime watchers of All Japan remember Nobuo Shiraishi in 2013, obviously, the crazy egomaniac guy. So to me, that is a trend that I don't like. That I think could be a problem going on, just him sucking up air and being goofy and taking sort of attention away from all of the good things that the company has done. So I think that is that's a bigger red flag or in warning than anything with WWE, unless there's an actual formal relationship, which again, I don't think there is. You know, could be wrong, but I'm knocking on wood that there's not. But again, to me, that is the more troublesome thing that is more likely to continue in this regard. And I don't like it. And I'm not the only person to point this out as well. So, you know, people sort of got that feeling too, that this is a problem regardless of what's happening with WWE. And so hopefully that this is just a little, you know, set up the holiday shows and that this is not a thing going forward.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So we're going to go on to Pro Wrestling Noah next. You know, I was thinking to myself about this, and I think perhaps, and, you know, I don't know. Again, we'll talk about vibes. I think the sort of storm or the trough or whatever has passed, and I think maybe that, yeah, and I'll get into some of the problems later. But I don't know. I think things can only, well, you never say never, but I think things can only go up from here. So I don't know, I have a semi-good feeling about this show, so let's get into it. First off, we've got the dark match. You got the rookies Taishi Ozawa and Yu Owada, and then we have another dark match. It's an 8-man tag team match. Muhammad Yone, Atsushi Kotoge, Super Crazy, and Teriyaki versus Akitoshi Saito, Hajime Ohara, Hiroki, and Kai Fujimura. And then the three-way match for the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf, the champions, versus Yohei and Tadasuke versus Ninja Mac and Alejandro. I mean, this, I think, will be good. It'll just be a spot fest. But, I mean, you know, you need one of those on this card. Next up, titled International Sensation, 6-minute tag match. We've got good-looking guys Jake Lee, Jack Morris, and Anthony Green versus El Hijo, Dr. Wagner Jr., who I should say has signed another contract, a new contract with Noah for, I don't know how long, but at least 2024, I would assume. So that's a good sign, because he was a breakout star in 2023 for Noah, so that is really great that he's hanging around. And then we got Vinny Massaro and Titus Alexander, which is a huge, this is a huge thing for both of those guys who have been solid in Noah, especially helping the Monday Magic shows. So that is great to see. And then we've got a Noah versus New Japan match, Masa Kitamiya versus Tomohiro Ishii. I can't complain about this. I think it will be great. Hopefully it gets, you know, 15 minutes and everything like that. I would assume that Ishii's going to win this one, though, actually, I think. Because that leads us to the second Noah versus New Japan match. We got Goshi Ozaki versus Satoshi Kojima, the rematch from the 2022 Cyberfight Festival main event. I think, considering that Kojima had just pinned Shiozaki in a tag match, Go wins here. Although I don't know what that means, because it still feels like they're downcycling Go. But I mean, I can't go wrong with the match between those two guys, although it's probably going to get 15 minutes match. And then we've got the Great Sakuya Advent. Great Sakuya and Nagisa Nozaki versus Haruka Umeseka and Miyuki Takase. I've heard that Sakuya, it could be, well, this is a speculation, Riko Kawahara. Marvelous. But nevertheless, I think with that talent in there, although Nozaki's looks a little rusty, but she's still very solid. I think that will be a good match. And then singles match, we've got Aoka Sasaki versus Takashi Sugera. And now it's come out that Aoka sounds like he's going to be a regular in Pro Wrestling Noah going forward. And I have to say, I am fine with that. I mean, you know, obviously he's green, but MMA fighters tend to adapt. And look, given the way that he's only 34 years old, you know, he's got a good look, a little small, but that's not as big a deal in Noah. He's actually, you know, maybe a more skinny, but his height is around where you've got your other guys, like your Seguras and like what Nakajima was in Kano and everything like that. So if he wants to do this, I think they might as well ride it, because what else they got, you know, and that sort of thing, right? And I had no problem with that, because he's obviously like a pro wrestling fan and wants to do this, as opposed to just trying to cash a check and everything like that. And I think he's going to work hard. And I think Segura is the first great opponent, because they can just stiff themselves, each other, I should say. And then next up, we have the tag match Wrestling Sympathy. Is Zack Sabre Jr. and Yoshinori Ogawa versus Hiroshi Tanahashi and Hayata. I would assume that maybe Sabre and Ogawa win, because they're the established tag team. It could be either way, but like Ogawa's pinning Hayata and Hayata's pinning Ogawa. Maybe Tanahashi pins Ogawa or Sabre submits Hayata. But again, well, I was going to say I was looking forward to this. But, you know, Hyde is there, but, you know, well, these other three, and even Tanahashi in this day and age can make something of it. Now, we get into the sort of the situation where this has become New Japan calling it Wrestle Kingdom Week, because now you've got two matches on this card setting up matches at Wrestle Kingdom, which is so silly and ridiculous, but Noah has allowed themselves to do it. And if you wanted to tell me, or if I were to tell you what I think probably one of the bigger problems still in Noah is that they have allowed themselves, especially to be cucked by New Japan. You know, it is what it is. For the GHC Junior Heavyweight title match, sorry, we've got Daga versus Ada. I mean, Daga said he wants to continue. I think he left AAA and has said that he wants to continue to focus in Noah in 2024. For some reason, I thought he might be focusing in Ring of Honor, but I guess not. But I think that this is sort of the build-up to Ada's long-awaited reign with the GHC Junior title. So I think he wins here. And, well, it depends what kind of Ada, not just in this match, but because they might want to do Lucha stuff, and it could be good. You know, you can never completely write something like this off, even if some of the stuff has been underwhelming with the Ada tag team and Stinger and drama and everything like that. But so I don't know, this is a question mark of how good the match will be, and it's a question mark of what kind of Ada will show up if he wins this title, what kind of reign it will be. But can't write it off. Ada's just simply too talented, even if I don't always like his creative choices. And then we have, speaking of road to Wrestle Kingdom or Wrestle Kingdom Week, we've got Noah in New Japan versus House of Torture. We've got Kaito Kiyomiya, Shota Umino, Ryohei Oiwa, Daiki Inaba, Shuji Kondo, and Junta Miyawaki versus Evil, Ren Narita, Yujiro Takahashi, Sho, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Dick Togo. Yeah, I'm not into this. I don't like House of Torture. I despise House of Torture. I think it's ridiculous, and I think some of the defenses of House of Torture are ridiculous. It is... You know, I mean, we've been pretty solid on the when Voodoo Murders was bad, how bad it was. And the fact of the matter is Bullet Club and House of Torture really have our successors to Voodoo Murders in many ways, not just simply like NWO things, right? That sort of Voodoo Murders, and especially with all the foreigners and Voodoo Murders and R.O.D. as well. I mean, though that sort of thing is actually very much also shapes, you know, what we have today with Bullet Club and House of Torture. I don't like the interference. It's ridiculous. People will defend that against heat, yada, yada. And I don't think it's killing the promotion. But I think with a company with like New Japan, with its level of talent and its resources, and yes, it has resources, even if, you know, can't afford to, you know, re-sign certain wrestlers and everything like that. The fact of the matter is that they could be putting their talents towards better uses than this that would have much bigger returns than House of Torture does. In terms of putting people into seats and everything like that, I don't buy that it's simply over. You could be doing something else that would be a much bigger deal that is far less annoying. I don't have any time for it. And I don't have any time for it. It's just, I don't know how you can compare it to bracket out just the worst of North American pro wrestling as well. I just don't have any time for it. And I think it drags down the show and it's just useless, right? That's the thing, right? Because, you know, and I was planning on going into this digression and stuff like that because of sort of the main event, but with the AEW relationship, and it's funny because I see a sort of vocal crowd up there that think that does not like the AEW and New Japan relationship. And I sort of laugh at that because, look, okay, I will concede the point that perhaps, you know, on AEW TV, on Forbidden Door or whatever, you do not get up and down the card as many interesting matches as you can. You could say that AEW doesn't let their guys lose as much as they should to the New Japan guys. I get it. That's fine. But but you have to then make a case that somehow this is affecting the product that happens on the shows in Japan. And it really doesn't in any super meaningful way, right? If you think there is a malaise in New Japan and maybe malaise is a strong word, but some people have that feeling about a malaise. If you don't like Sonata, and my feeling on Sonata is that he is somewhat under-delivering as champion, but at the same time, what else are you going to go with? Another, like, you know, the only other option would be another Naito Okada main event, but they sort of did a lot of that during the pandemic when they needed to sort of sell as many tickets as they can. So that match sort of, well, they did in the G1 finals, which is a little different because I think that the winner is sort of, you know, more up in the air of who people might think it might be and everything like that. So Sonata is not, or AEW is not responsible for Sonata's champion. Sonata is, or AEW is not responsible for any whatever backstage stuff that has led to the removal of Obari and Hiroshi Tanahashi becoming president of the company. AEW is not responsible for House of Torture or any of the booking or anything like that. If you don't like certain wrestlers getting pushed, or if you think the Rewa Three Musketeers are not being pushed fast enough, and I think there's a legitimate argument to be made that they should be probably pushed maybe faster and harder. Again, AEW has nothing to do with that. I think that, you know, yeah, you can be. But I just think some people take it to be more of an overall thing that's affecting the company. And I get it. Yeah, maybe it's not always the best, you know, maximizing use of when they're over in the States or North America. But I just don't think that the bigger issues in the company are caused by AEW. And I sort of just roll my eyes when people complain about that relationship because they think it's sort of affecting the whole company and dragging the whole company down when that's not the case. Other choices. If you think it is malaise, I think that malaise question is somewhat overrated. I think that there's simply just, well, House of Torture, one thing. But there's just simply too much talent in the company, and especially young talent now. I think some more rookies just debuted recently that this company can't pull itself out of. And that, you know, the AEW thing is what's dragging it down. But House of Torture is. And then for the GHC heavyweight title match, we got Kenno versus Manabu Soya, and obviously this is a match that you know, with the whole attention of what the real main event is of and everything like that, I think that these two guys are going to go out there and want to put on a show. They are probably just going to stiff the crap out of each other and work real hard because they have something to prove. But of course the result is in no question because it's going to be Kenno. But this is honestly a nice reward for Soya, who worked really hard all of 2023 and arguably had the best year of his career. Just great stuff. And I'm expecting, I really think this will, when we go look back at like the week of New Year's or Wrestle Kingdom week or whatever you want to call it, that this will be one of the best matches of that week. So now we go to our main event, which is Naomi Chimura Fuji versus Kota Ibushi in a dream match. And yes, it is a dream match. It was something that was planned on happening like a decade ago, but injuries got in the way and everything like that. Obviously, Chimura Fuji and Ibushi are not what they once were as wrestlers physically. So there's a lot of question marks going into that. I actually think that they can have a good match if they just do some ground and pound and just chop and kick each other really hard. I think that they can make something of it. It's not necessarily on a spectacular level, but just on a solid match structure like this. And in many ways, this is sort of like the ultimate test to see if what Ibushi is capable of. Although I think some people, it seems, I don't know. I didn't see AEW last night. I haven't in months. I got out of there as soon as I smelled the sports entertainment stuff increasing way back in February. I will go back and watch, you know, your very highly touted matches, whether it's like, you know, Omega versus Ospreay 2 or like Swerve versus Hangman and stuff like that. Anyway, so I think that something that Ibushi is going to be working World's End to fill in for Kenny Omega, possibly. So I don't know if the jet lag and getting over there and traveling is going to affect him or anything like that. So we'll see. But I can't say that I think this is going to be a disaster. Or it could be. Who knows, right? So this is really sort of like, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm actually very curious to see what happens with this and everything. Because it's going to be very telling about Ibushi. But I would assume that Chimura Fuji probably wants to have a good match. I don't know what Ibushi's headspace is in or anything like that. So it's a question mark. But I think it can. I think it still has the potential to surprise people on how good it could be. But yes, it could be sort of just a 3.5-star affair, or not good because Ibushi is just too far gone. I don't know. Who knows, right? I'm just not someone, I guess, when it comes to wrestlers showing their age, especially like great wrestlers showing their age, I want a bigger resume than what Ibushi has done since returning and leaving New Japan from his shoulder injury. He's probably, you know, not what he, obviously not what he once was, but I am not someone to completely write someone off until they have a much bigger sort of resume of matches when they're coming back from especially in a long-term injury. And with everything that Ibushi has been through, it could be, something that's as mental as much as physical. And maybe he just needs to get that love of wrestling back and everything like that, right? So that's why I think that there is still a chance that this could deliver. I don't know if it is going to be in the same breath of what Kenno versus Soya could be, and obviously Miyahara versus Nakajima. But we will see. And that, to me, is sort of one of the sort of draws to the show, just like, what is this main event going to be? We don't know what it could be. Is it going to disappoint? Is it going to be great? I don't know. So there's that, but it is going to have my attention. With the exception of House of Torture, I don't think it's a bad card. It can be a little underwhelming, but I think that Noah can still deliver. And I think if Noah can get past this hump, who knows what, I guess, what the relationship with New Japan portends. But I think that, you know, Wagner's re-signed. You've got guys now, like, I don't know how long Titus Alexander's going to be hanging around. Because obviously he's not there with Noah. He's there with Marvelous. But this is his regular sort of stop. He's in the Marvelous dojo. But this is a regular stop. They'd be wise to see if they can get him as much as possible as well. So, you know, I think that this can be a sort of a transition point for Pro Wrestling Noah. With this being the last show of the year, I thought I'd do a quick, very brief, year in review. So we'll start with Noah. Obviously, as everyone, many expected, the things went sort of in a downward direction after the Muto retirement show in February. I didn't think it was all too bad, honestly, up until after the N1. But after the N1, I thought things got really, really you know, bad is a strong word, but just sometimes hard to get through these shows. And it was like, I only want to watch maybe one or two matches from these shows. It was sort of hard to watch, but just not because it was bad, but just because it was so uninteresting. But the Monday Magics did help things. And I think that it allowed people to get some shine in the company, especially like people like Titus Alexander, people like Teriyaki, who I have both been impressed with. And obviously the Monday Magics aren't coming back until April. And then we've got the May Sumo Hall show, which has a magic sort of, I think it's like wrestling magic or wrestle magic or something like that. So it could be all tied in. We'll see what that is. So that was like the brief at NOAH 2024. I don't think I'm alone in that feeling. Although, I mean, again, there's still despite some losses, obviously Nakajima being a big one, I still think they have a great roster. It's just what you sort of have to do with them. And the booking sort of has been a little lackluster on that. But I think Kenno is good enough to help pull things in an upward direction after the January 2nd show. So I think the 2024 will be better. If they lose more people, then we could have a repeat of late 2023, where it just becomes like a slog sometimes. But I guess I'm cautiously optimistic, because I think Kenno can really is just such a talent that obviously other things in the promotion have to improve. But I think that he's the right man to be champion for, I think, a long time at this point, especially. And then, of course, we have All Japan. And I went over what I'm concerned about President Fukuda more than WWE. But what can I say? It's been a great year for them, business-wise, creatively. Made new stars, or are in the process of building new stars. A lot of people got elevated this year. I thought there was a little lull from the Champion Carnival, maybe from May to August. But from August, September onwards, great, amazing stuff. The most excited I've been watching the company in years. You like, obviously, if Miyahara left tomorrow, it would be a big blow. But you can imagine an All Japan without Miyahara now. You've got the Aoyagis, you got Honda, you got Anzai. The junior division is improved, but the cycle of booking is still a problem. They held the tryout on the 21st before the New Age Chronicles show. So hopefully that they have accepted some more wrestlers into the dojo. And hopefully something like Taka Omori's departure is more of a sign of more youth coming into the company than, you know, backstage problems or anything like that. So I am very bullish for All Japan in 2024. I think Miyahara and Aoyagi want to lift this company up, and which is another reason. Well, I mean, Miyahara is obviously known that, he likes his American wrestlers, Hulk Hogan, obviously. But I just, you know, again, going back to this, I just don't think that. I think they have a vision, and I don't think that whatever is happening with the Dempsey guest spot, which is what it really just is going to drag it. And hopefully they can debut some new wrestlers and they can continue to elevate. I think 2024 will probably be a big year for Rising Hayato eventually. Honda and Anzai, I would hope, maybe win the tag titles. And I think obviously the Saitos were a delight. Obviously, I've been a big defender of them. They were just something different. You know, throwback to these huge lumbering ex-sumo guys that you hadn't seen as much in Japanese wrestling as you used to. And they've come into their own. The company has obviously done a very good job promoting them, you know, outside in the media, doing media appearances, that show where they get in the cab and go around and eat restaurants, to the point where they now have made entrances in cabs at shows and everything like that. And they've clearly improved in the ring, and I think they will continue to do so. Yes, they're older. They are 37 now, but I think they have a few years of a good run in them. So I am excited, and I'm going to continue to sing their praises and defend them very, very strongly, furiously. So yeah, I'm still bullish, and I'm not going to, I've been through this already. I'm repeating myself, but yeah, no, I just don't think the WWE thing is that big a deal, and we'll probably realize that all in like a month from now. So yeah, I think that's for All Japan. Other quick 2023 thoughts. Big Japan, I didn't watch as much as I wanted to, but the Astronauts had a great year, and there is a lot of great stuff with Yuya Aoki's title reign that you should check out. Absolutely. And check out all of the Astronauts tag title matches. I would probably put Mihara and Aoyagi just a little ahead of Astronauts as my overall tag team of the year in all of wrestling. And there's been some great stuff, Kaiji Tomato as the junior champion and everything like that. And they have some foreigners, you know, Ender Kara, Leighton Buzzard now in the company. DDT. Look, I thought DDT hit a low that it hadn't in... Well, people were really low on DDT, even despite the fact that Higuchi was champion. I was higher on it because Higuchi was champion. But the inexplicable decision to put the title on Yuji Hino soured things. But they persevered, and obviously, you know, Chris Brooks had a great reign. And now Yuki Ueno has the champion, and I liked their match. Probably, I mean, I think people recognize their match as being technically great, but it sort of lacked that, I don't know, passion or, you know, whatever to it, or excitement or drama. I still thought it was a great match. I think it was only a matter of time before Ueno won the title. And I think that there are things in DDT that I'm a little more bullish on, but I'm never really all the way in with DDT, but I still think that they are probably trending in the right direction. So, I mean, and they still have some really great big matches and everything like that. And anything else I watched? Well, obviously you want to watch Takuya Nomura versus Fuminori Abe, and that's on Wrestle Universe, and we talked about that. That was the other big highlight of the year, I suppose. I sort of touched on New Japan a bit. I don't know. I think they're in a holding pattern, but I think it's a rebuilding time. And I think so as a result, I think some people can be a little overly dramatic with the direction of the company. I will say that as I went through, other than House of Torture, which is trash. So yeah. And I realized that I forgot to talk about this United Japan Pro Wrestling thing. And they're going to do a show at Budokan in early May, I believe. Now, my read on this, because some people think that this is some sort of like permanent thing, I think they just want to do another all-together style show just for the sake of it, make a little bit of money. But ultimately, I think that this is just an organization, a professional or industry organization to lobby the government, because obviously coming out of COVID and everything like that, you know, there was some lobbying done, and maybe that it wasn't always united, so they can sort of put on a united front when it comes to lobbying the government, if in case anything else happens. I mean, obviously, I don't know what's going on, but rumors that the Tokyo Dome is going to get torn down and replaced with luxury condos. And of course, if that happens, then maybe Korakuen Hall is getting torn down as well. And, you know, that could be a problem because of how important Korakuen Hall is, given its central location, given its history, you know, where our company is going to run and find a 1,500-seat venue in central Tokyo. Type thing. So it makes sense from that perspective of why they would want some sort of essentially a lobbying organization for the pro wrestling industry. And I think that's all it is. There's nothing more to read into it. I don't think that you're going to have a dramatic amount of interpromotion, or, well, there was already interpromotional stuff, but I don't think it's going to change the pace or the amount of it. The interpromotional stuff is interesting. What could be in 2024? I guess I'll just make some predictions. I think DDT and All Japan relationship works because most of the DDT guys, unless except for the really top guys, can lose, and it's not a deal, as we saw with Eruption in the Real World Tag League. I think Noah is going to continue to try to ride on New Japan's coattails, and I think that it's not. I mean, the OE one, Kiyomiya tag team is great, but Kiyomiya does not come across as a guy that's like won singles tournaments and is a, you know, a multi-time GHC champion. He feels like he's like barely above Young Lion phase with this, despite, you know, I really like them as a team. It's just the question of perception and everything like that. But I think that Noah is going to continue to ride that, that train, basically. As far as All Japan working with New Japan and Noah, I don't know what's going to happen with that. There hasn't been much since Kojima and Nagata stopped being regulars. Suzuki is a freelancer anyway, Minoru. Right? And then obviously we've seen like Hideki Suzuki hasn't worked Noah, I think, since like November or maybe even October. I think it might have been in October. So, like, has he sort of left because of what's going on there? Well, I'm not saying there was a problem, but he just sort of just moved on to the next place, not on some bad terms or anything. But a place where there he could be used differently, because I don't think he was going to be used. He'll be the focal point of stuff in All Japan. I don't think he would just be a background player in Noah right now, which is fine. Again, Hideki probably had something to do with this WWE deal. But I have enjoyed Hideki in All Japan so far, in all honesty. His team with Suwama, despite the first match, became fun. And I really like his stuff with Anzai. I mean, hopefully it leads up to an Anzai singles match where Anzai wins. But I can't hold my breath on something like that. But I think it would be a great way to help elevate Anzai. So I don't know what's going on with Noah in All Japan, because you've had like Rising Hayato and Yuma Anzai on Monday Magic shows, both getting huge responses from the crowd on those shows. And Jake even teasing something with Anzai. So will Jake Lee be in All Japan in 2024? No, not like a jump back, but as an interpromotional thing. I don't think you can write it off. I think it's something that could happen. Other predictions for 2024? I think Kenta holds the GHC title the whole year. I think he sort of has to, for the sake of rebuilding that company. And maybe by that time you can rebuild Kaito. I don't know. We'll see that in All Japan in 2024. I don't think Yuma Anzai wins the Triple Crown. I don't think Ryuki Honda wins the Triple Crown. If we have one new Triple Crown champion in 2024, it will be Shotaro Ishino. So how will Ishino do? I don't know. They have a big match. They have a big match coming up in late January, where they did the Miyahara versus Aoyagi match back last February. So that's like it's a sizable building. I actually think it can fit a little over 2,000 max. So could that be the spot for the title challenge that he still hasn't gotten because he broke his arm in the Champion Carnival Finals? I don't know, but it would, again, I don't see him being Nakajima, but that would be too soon to take the title off of Miyahara. I mean, maybe what you want to do is just have him win the Champion Carnival again. That's a nice little story, and then he could finally have his moment. Then maybe he can have an unsuccessful attempt before that. I don't know. But I just think that he is the most likely person. And I'm not 100% on this, but if I had to pick someone who finally wins the Triple Crown in 2024, who hasn't won the Triple Crown before, it would be Ishino. I think if I have any other predictions. Oh, the Noah Junior division will continue to be what it is, what it is. Ada, I think, has an opportunity to elevate things, but I think he will just do the usual shtick that he's been doing since he came to Noah, unfortunately. Because it could be more, and that division could be so much more. We've seen a dramatic improvement with the junior tag titles, and all they needed to do with the junior tag titles was just put it on two guys that are high flyers and just go out there and do spot fests and everything like that. And the division greatly improved. So I don't think it's like the thing with Noah is, like, as I said, with the talent, I don't think that the building or the rebuilding of it is some sort of complex process or anything like that. Other things I think happen in Noah, I think Morris will continue having a solid national title run, and I think that the GHC tag titles hopefully get some more prominence, because there's a lot of potential there with teams like Inaba and Kitamiya, whose run got cut way too short, but they put in some solid performances. Quite possibly the most underrated tag team of the year. Just some other thoughts. I would say for most improved wrestler of the year, Akio to Dr. Wagner Jr., no question. Tag team of the year, Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi. Wrestler of the year from like an overall MVP perspective, Well, if we just sort of keep it to the smaller Japanese promotions, I think you can make a case that's Yuma Aoyagi, because he had great matches and he definitely helped All Japan's business improve. I mean, I think Kenno is in that conversation, but I just think that the overall direction of the promotion in late 2023 hurt it, even if he was trying his damnedest to make something of it. Most outstanding in all of this, Miyahara, maybe. I think he had the most great matches overall. Kaito is still a great worker in terms of, like, he's still young, so he still tries. And I've said this before, like, on the spot shows and everything like that, he works so hard. I mean, he's eventually going to slow down. I mean, guys like Okada did that too, right? But he's just a joy to watch in that. I just hope that they can resuscitate his career and everything like that. Show of the year, we'll give it to the Muto retirement show. I mean, it was a spectacle, obviously. I wasn't as high on the main event as others. It's sort of funny because there's definitely people that are like obsessive work rate nerds that just decided to get all emotional and said that was an amazing match. And I'm needling them because of how much some people normally put into, like, oh, the work rate, are there too many rest holds, was the selling of the leg? But then people, because of this is how pro wrestling really is, and it's really about getting emotion and getting emotion out of people, that you know, the Naito and Muto match, and then the little Chono and Muto thing, it tugged everyone's heartstrings to the point where you stop caring about, you know, how much selling of the leg there was or anything like that. So that's always funny to me. I think that about wraps it up for this week. This is, like I said, the last show of the year. So I just did. I wanted to do a quick year in review. Paul may record in Japan. That's just a question of like how easy that is to do or anything like that. So I cannot guarantee you any shows from Paul while he's in Japan, just to let you know. But I will be back here after January 3rd with a guest to talk about the three All Japan shows and the Noah, the New Year show. So I hope, so once again, I apologize, again, profusely, very embarrassing. And I feel so bad about it, which we went over. I hope you had a great holiday. I hope you have a great new year. I hope you continue to listen to the Emerald Flow Show. We might try to shake things up in the new year, maybe have more focused shows on certain topics and everything like that. And I would just like to thank all of our listeners, because we're coming up on 2 years of the show, which is sort of impressive, I suppose, if one considers how many podcasts never get past one episode and everything like that. And, you know, I know actually in the last couple of days, I had people just reach out to me, you know, just to reassure me and everything like that. And I know there are listeners and everything like that. And I always, 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 I really appreciate that. We both do. And everything like that. And Paul is a great co-host and everything. So I wish you all the best for 2024. And hopefully pro wrestling, or at least the pro wrestling that we watch. And you know what? I want the whole industry to improve and be strong, because I do generally think a rising tide lifts all boats, except for when it's with WWE, but that's another story. And I've been all through that. And just on a personal note, I know she might or might not be listening, but she does listen sometimes. I got engaged to my girlfriend over the holidays, so I just wanted to say to Jenny, I love you so much. And thank you so much for everything this past year to our listeners. It has been always fun through the ups and downs of everything. So we will see you all in 2024.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.